Welcome to Dubs OT, your weekly Warriors podcast on thesportsvirus.com. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Whitson and Joe Castellano.
Well, Ray, our first Warriors podcast, Dubs OT, and what a game to talk about in a season where I don't know that you have high expectations for this team, especially I don't think anybody did when Draymond Green was out of the lineup, but things have really turned, and this was really a remarkable win over the Clippers on Friday night, a game where the Warriors trailed by 22 points with about 2 minutes to go in the third quarter, but a riveting, sensational comeback led by another dazzling, scintillating performance by Steph Curry. It just left me with chills, Ray. I was ready to check myself and say, wait a minute, do I have COVID? I was a little worried about that. But no, seriously, That game gave me chills.
Well, it was reminiscent of games during their halcyon days, going from 2014 to 2019, early 2019. They didn't have Klay Thompson. They didn't have Kevin Durant. But it was reminiscent of those kinds of games where they went on one of those epic runs led by Steph Curry, playing good defense, getting out in transition, making threes, which they haven't done. They made 20 of them tonight, Joe.
Wow.
20.
Yeah.
this Warriors team, wow, what happened? Well, what happened was Steph made 9 of them, but they got some buckets from other people. And, in the first half, and this was very much the case in the previous game, the Clippers were putting 8 in the box against Steph, and why wouldn't you? Dare the other people to beat you. And that was working, and I totally understand that. Until they beat you, that's what you do. You make life uncomfortable for Steph. But a couple things happened. Other guys started making buckets. Not Kelly Oubre, but a couple other guys did. Pascal made a couple of threes. Wanamaker made a couple of threes. Damian Lee made a couple threes and got some more minutes. And I think that Steve Kerr is going to have to play Damian Lee some more because he's another shooting threat, as is Michael Mulder. And Wanamaker has shown that he can hit a three as well. But beyond that, I think that, they found a way to break the two or three players who bracket Steph. He gets into dribble penetration. He kicks it to Draymond in the lane or out at the top of the key, and things start happening. And Draymond, they're going to dare him to shoot. They're giving him the Tony Allen treatment. He's not going to shoot threes very often. But he is going to create. He is going to make things happen. And there was a great play. I think you remember this at the end of the game where Draymond came in the lane and did a ball fake and then got an easy layup.
Yeah.
Great play. And that tells me that it's, starting to click in for Draymond. He's starting to get his sea legs. And I think that, everything clicks better on the offense when Draymond is running things and he's that option in the middle to make things happen. They may not come to him, but he knows where to deliver the basketball. And, of course, on the defensive end, what he contributes has made a big difference to this team. We've seen it in the last few games. So this is not the Warrior team we saw at the start of the year. We knew they would improve with Draymond. The question is how much. They're still very much a work in progress. But, timing is everything, Joe. I'm glad you called me tonight because that was – a hell of a win, and I think the most important moment for the Warriors since the 19 finals, this is the most important week because you had this happen, and then you had, of course, the game where Steph dropped 62 to beat Portland. Before that, they were just beating bad teams. Well, now they've beaten a couple of decent teams.
Yeah.
One team that, they're talking about the Clippers as a possible championship contender. Save that until they show you. They folded in the playoffs last year. They folded tonight. I still don't know how mentally tough they are. They're awfully talented, and they're great at the defensive end. So with those elements and, with two premier players like Paul George and Kawhi Leonard, you would think they're going to go far. But, you don't judge a whole lot early in the season. I would expect the Clippers to be up there, but there's something about them that's missing, at least so far.
Well, in the first half and, part of that third quarter, to me it looked like the Clippers could do pretty much what they wanted. But I thought Steve Kerr did a great job of coaching. You mentioned it that, now you've got Damian Lee in there and Mulder and, guys like that are hitting shots. You get a couple of big shots there by Wanamaker. And you got to make those kind of moves. In crunch time – You've got a guy like Damian Lee out there. You don't have Oubre. You don't have Weissman out there. Two starters are sitting down because Steve Kerr wasn't afraid to make those adjustments, and the defense stepped it up. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that you want to see from your head coach. And going forward, you mentioned it, that Oubre is struggling. I mean, he looks lost out there. It's not just the three-point shooting. I mean, he's turning the ball over, and I don't know what's going to happen with him, but I would pull him from the starting lineup for right now, and I would start Damian Lee. What do you think?
I think against certain teams, you have to. That's going to open things up a little bit. You know, and make it a little easier for Steph as well. You know, Steph is so great that he finds a way, and he ends up at 38 tonight. But things open up for him in the second half for the reasons that we detailed. And I think they need another shooter on the court. I still think that, and I think this team can think about the playoffs. They didn't dig themselves a hole. They're just, a game and a half out going into tonight. I think everybody in the West is a game and a half out behind the Clippers going into tonight. And Phoenix as well. The Phoenix lost. Now the Clippers have lost. So it's all crunched together. You're not losing any ground by experimenting a little bit right now. It's not going to do you a whole lot of damage. And clearly it's damaging Oubre's psyche right now. You can't shoot the ball. There was a point there, I think it was in the third quarter, where he had a wing three, and he hesitated for a minute, and he thought about it. You never want to do that. You never want to get thinking into the equation when it comes to shooting. And then the shot, disappeared. There was no more space there, so he tried to dribble into the lane. Three defenders converged on him. He lost the ball. He went to the other end, and the Clippers got an and one. This is a guy who's a pretty good defensive player, but he's lost offensively, and that leads to bad possessions. And that leads to easier buckets for the opponent on the other end. So it negates whatever he offers to them in the half-court set defensively. I saw him play in Phoenix last year, and he's a pretty good player, had a pretty good year. He could shoot. We know he can shoot. But maybe he's pressing a little bit coming to this squad. I'm not sure what it is. I think he cares. Maybe cares too much at this point because it's gotten inside his head a little bit. You see that on the court. It's evident. So I think it's time for a change of scenery. That change of scenery is maybe having him come off the bench, depending on the matchup, depending on the team, and then working him back in as he plays a little bit better. You've thrown a lot of guys together that haven't played together this year. And again, Steve Kerr's had an experiment, and I know the fans get antsy. Crying out loud, we're talking, 9 games in? Even in a shortened season, it's just 9 games, and you're not losing ground here. You're doing okay. You're at 5-4. So, I think a little patience with benefit fans regarding Steve Kerr and regarding Kelly Oubre, and Steve Kerr being patient with Oubre would work well. But I think that at this point, it would not shock me at all if they make a little lineup change there and bring in another shooter to help out Steph and help out the offense because, there are times where it's just stuck in the mud. And you don't want to have that with this team and put so much of a burden on a great player like Steph. But, having said that, when you have a great future Hall of Fame player like Steph, you always have a puncher's chance. And when it gets a little bit of support, some pretty special things can happen. That's what happened tonight. He doesn't have to score 62, but he's got to score 30. Offense, he's got to score 30. So put him in the position to be able to do that. Maybe having another shooter on the floor does that. Maybe Damian Lee's the answer. Maybe down the road it's going to be somebody else that they acquire. But I think this is a team that's going to be in a playoff-ready position, at least, to where they can acquire that guy. And no, this is not the dynasty team of, 5-year stretch of all that great basketball we saw in person so many times. But it's a much better team than last year. The division in this is in a state of flux. If Bob Myers and Joe Lacob see an opportunity, they're going to seize it a little later on this year. And it's the job of this team and Steve Kerr right now to put them in that position. But, for the fans, this is far more exciting than last year, obviously. And it's been the most exciting basketball we've seen in a year and a half?
Yeah, I mean, it's just so great, Ray, to see Steph Curry healthy. I mean, the way he's handling the ball, the way he's going to the basket, you know, the way he's, you know, making these threes, too, and creating room because he's getting double and triple teamed, yet he's sidestepping, he's stepping back, and, you know, he's finding all different creative ways to score. I mean, how about that move he made on that reverse layup? That's something that, you know, you practice a lot in the gym when you're by yourself, but when it really counts and he goes to that reverse and he spins it off the glass and makes that one. I mean, it's just one after another. And he knows that he's going to have to be the show. Like you said, he's going to have to score 30 points a night. I mean, the Warriors so far are 5-0 when he does score 30
That's
plus,
right.
But he's carrying this load every night, which is not easy to do without Klay Thompson there. I think he's just doing an outstanding job. He just needs some help here and there.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more of here and there would be nice.
Right.
You know, we're getting a preview of what playoff defenses have done against Steph in the past, and will continue to do. He's used to that. I had to laugh on the TV broadcast after one of the games. Maybe it was after this 62-point game, and Kalena Azubuike asked Steph if he almost looked forward to that challenge of breaking down the defense, you know, when a double or a triple comes
at
him. And, you know, and kick the ball to the corner or get to the hoop or whatever. And he said, well, not really.
No.
I mean, it's tiring. It's physically tiring. But he's in, you know, peak shape, and he's well-rested. You can see that after what's happened the last year and a half. And, you know, this is what makes this team interesting, a healthy Steph right now. He remains one of the great attractions of the NBA, and it's reflected in the results on the court and the ratings as well for all the different TV outlets. So that's what I look forward to, is seeing what this guy's going to do, because, you know, the other thing is, early in the season, and again, based on small sample size, people were making some assumptions based on conditions at the time for the Warriors that were going to change. Because Draymond was coming back, these guys were going to play with each other a little bit more and know each other a little bit. And Steph was off to a fairly slow start, but you knew he was going to get going. But people were talking about, oh, now they're going to question how much of a role he had in those championships and his legacy and things like that. And you know, Damian Lillard made the point, too, that it's kind of tough for Steph right now, so he's kind of been diminished. And what did Steph answer with? He dropped 62 in Dame and the Blazers. And
right.
I think Bob Myers or somebody ought to hire somebody to go on social media to talk mess about Steph. He seems to respond pretty well to that. So, you know, we've seen him. I've seen him from the very beginning, and I've said it before. This was, is, and always will be Steph's team. And we love Klay. There's no doubt about it. And they can't win a championship without Klay. They might be able to win a championship without KD, and they damn near did it last year. But when Klay went down, that was curtains. I don't think they win a championship without Klay, unless somehow they're able to work a miracle deal to vault them to the top. But they're going to give it a good run this year, I think. You know, I just think that the danger was, don't play yourself out of playoff contention earlier in the year. And what you needed was to get Draymond back and to get some guys playing a little bit better. One of those guys is Wiggins, and he started to play a little bit better. They definitely need another scoring threat on the floor. And again, that's part of the here and there to help step out.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like Wiggins was asleep the first few games, and then all of a sudden he came to life. And I thought a really great point made by Mark Jackson about Steph Curry keeping his cool when it could be frustrating watching other players miss shots. I mean, it's kind of like the pitcher in baseball who's getting ground balls and they're getting booted all over the place. It's really hard to deal with that, but Steph is the perfect leader for this team. I mean, you might see him shake his head every once in a while, but for the most part, he's not losing confidence in his teammates. I mean, it's got to be hard sometimes to throw Oubre the ball when he's open because you know that he has really been cold, but for the most part, I think Steph is trying to keep everybody involved, and he shows confidence in his team, and he's not getting frustrated when the other guys are not coming through, and that's just not easy to do when you're the leader of the team.
Well, it's not his first rodeo, you know, and I think he sees some things with this team that are going to excite him, obviously, compared to last year. I think he's excited to be back on the floor and healthy, and he's feeling really good. And so I think he's going to work through that. And he understands, like I said, that they're throwing a lot of players together. I'm going to give you an update, Joe. Strike our conversation about Kelly Oubre, at least for now. Because Steve Kerr said postgame he does not anticipate changing the starting lineup right now.
Mm.
He says it's so early in the season, and he wants Oubre to gain some rhythm and some confidence. Says he's a proven player. He's been doing this for years. He'll get going. And I'll tell you what that's about. I mean, I can understand this a little bit. I mean, Oubre is definitely struggling. It's been a very, very tough watch. But he hasn't killed him, all right? People are saying he's killing him. No, they're 5-4. They're working through some stuff. They just beat a pretty good Clippers team. So whatever he's doing, maybe they're winning in spite of him right now, but he's not causing them to lose with regularity at the moment. And Kerr knows he's with a new team and trying to find his way, trying to find his place. And really, part of that is starting to knock down some open shots because they're going to leave him open until he starts hitting again. But he's got no rhythm right now. And I think that Kerr wants to show that, hey, we brought you here for a reason. We believe in you. If he demotes him to the bench, maybe that damages his psyche a little bit. And then what are you dealing with? A player that's not playing well on the floor and is not feeling well, you know, mentally, as far as, you know, getting in sync with the rest of the team. And that's not the way you want to do a veteran player this early in the year. And again, he's got a track record. He's got a back of the basketball card to refer to, and he has been an improving player over the last couple of years. So, yeah, it's been a really, really rough start. But I think we talked about this before. How many times when we get to the playoffs do we talk about a game in November?
Right.
You know, or
early on,
January.
Right?
Yeah, an early game. We don't. So there's going to be hyper-focus early because, well, we haven't had a lot of Warrior games to talk about in the last year or so. And this is a new guy, and the expectations were high, and I was happy that they signed Oubre. But it's been a tough watch so far. There's no doubt about it. There's no getting around it. He's lost in a lot of ways. But, you know, with Draymond back and Steph playing as well as he ever has, this is not a bad situation to try to work things out. So this talented player, and I understand, give him a little more time.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I mean, he did have a sort of a bounce-back game against Sacramento where he went 4-for-6
yeah.
from three, and it looked like maybe he would get it going, and then he went cold again. And speaking of cold, Ray, I mean, this was two games in a row where the Warriors came out ice cold out of the gates. I mean, that's the thing that Steve Kerr probably has to take a look at. Like, I mean, is it the fact that Oubre is starting and maybe he should start somebody else, or is it something else? I mean, they're just sloppy, turning the ball over, getting behind,
yeah.
and they can't afford to have come, you know, they're not always going to outscore the opponent 64-40 in the second half like they did tonight. And Steph isn't always going to go off like that. So you'd rather have a, you know, more of an even performance early on, and they're not getting that lately.
No. And again, it's a little bit of a roller coaster ride early in the season. I think, you know, fans on a certain level understand that, but you know, I think the players do too. A little frustrating, but I would say that the last week has been pretty damn encouraging. So let's let this marinate a little bit more, okay? I would understand having Oubre not start against a couple teams, like we said, and getting another shooter in there. But Oubre does bring certain things to the table and has certain potentials that you want to see come to fruition. Because if they do, if he becomes the player that we've seen in the last couple of years, this Warrior team is going to be very intriguing, okay? Like, not a championship, you know, flight, but a playoff team. And do they make a deep run? Well, again, with Steph, you always have a chance. But, you know, Oubre brings some things to the table that they've needed, but it just hadn't shown up yet. And part of the reason is he's just not making his shots. And it's almost like, you know, the baseball player who takes a bat at bat into the field. I think that's happened from time to time with Oubre. But I think he'll figure it out eventually. He's that good. You don't just suddenly become a terrible player unless you're hurt, not at his age. So the other part of it, Joe, is they've got a pretty good thing going with the second unit right now. And I thought the second unit had its best stretch of the season tonight.
Oh, yeah.
In the second half. So maybe you want to continue to work with that and see how they continue to play together, too. And then when you insert another player into the mix, dropping him down from the starting lineup, that kind of upsets the apple cart too. And you've already got a lot of unknowns to work with here with players trying to know each other. So I kind of get that. And, you know, with Draymond coming back, that's changed the rotation as well. Some people have dropped down. And it strengthened the bench a little bit. That's what happens when you have a starting player come back. Somebody else who's not used to starting goes back to the bench, and that kind of strengthens the depth there. So that's where we're at now. But it's just fun to talk basketball again.
Oh, I know.
Boy, is it fun. And you know, like I said, this is a good night to get this rolling.
One aspect of Oubre's shooting style is, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Ray, but I've noticed that he looks down at his feet a little bit to see where he is on the court to make sure he's shooting a three. And I don't think that's a good idea. To me, it seems like it's throwing him off. Just if you're there, you know, you hope that you're in the right spot. I mean, generally you are if you're comfortable, you know, on the wing or in the corner, and you just kind of know, like a Klay Thompson or even Damian Lee. He catches that ball. He's not looking at his feet. He's catching it and shooting it. I noticed that Oubre is looking down a little bit. That might be throwing him off a little.
No, that's what I talk about, thinking too much. I think it's why it's kind of gotten in his head a little bit right now. The guy shot a ton of threes in his career. He's made a ton. So
yeah,
not like he doesn't know where the line is. I think it's just a little bit of overthinking going on right now. And, you know, when it gets down to being in the natural flow, I think that'll come. But, you know, right now with a new player as well, and you know this guy's pretty good, I think it's benefit to just pat him on the back and say, hey, we know what you are. We know you're going to get it going. So just go out there and let it fly, right? And eventually I think it'll come around. This is a guy, of course, who's, I think, way better in transition. He's not necessarily a half-court threat. He's on the defensive end. He gets a stop. He gets a steal. He blocks a shot or a rebound, and he's off to the races. And in that arena, he's pretty good. But they haven't had that kind of pace and level of play so far this year for him. It's been kind of, you know, herky-jerky. You know, overall, their pace is pretty high, I think, as far as the NBA rankings. But it's been 5-minute stretches where it's kind of clunky and 5-minute stretches where they're a race car and sometimes an out-of-control race car. So it's a lot of fine-tuning here, just like a fine race car. They've got some talented players. They may still try to make a deal for something that they need, and they're going to find out what that is. Probably the highest priority is a shooter. In the meantime, see if the shooters you got can fill that gap and do enough for you.
Let's talk about James Wiseman. You know, I know he wasn't in crunch time, and maybe some people are going to make something out of that. I wouldn't make much out of it. I mean, he didn't play a lot of minutes in this game. You know, there's some things that I think he's going to have to work on. Obviously, he's so young at 19 years old. He's going to, you know, develop and become a great player. But right now, I think some of his low post moves needs to work on that. You know, some of the moves other than just dunking on lobs. But he has these huge graceful strides, Ray. I mean, it seems like, you know, he's just so easily able to, you know, dribble and get around people for a big man. And here's the other thing I noticed about him. It doesn't seem like he's having fun because he rarely smiles, but I think I understand that anybody who's a perfectionist sort of understands that mentality where you're trying to be great and you're not really out there, you know, having a blast. It's a different type of personality. I wouldn't put that against him or knock him for that, but I'm just saying that, you know, I think that's maybe what's going on as far as the fact that, you know, he looks like he wants to be perfect, and that's why he sort of looks like a mad guy out there. But man, is this kid ever talented, and to be only 19 years old and already being a factor for the Warriors is really amazing.
Well, you know how you go to the movies when we used to go to movie theaters?
Yeah, yeah.
And they start playing, you know, the little features and commercials, and you see the dancing hot dog and the dancing drink going
right
across the screen.
Popcorn, yeah.
And then you see the turn off your cell phone PSA.
Right.
And then they show you upcoming attractions. That's what we're seeing right now with James Wiseman. We're seeing the previews of movies yet to come.
And that's so a good analogy.
Two or three minutes of pretty cool stuff, right? And to the point where you say, "Oh, I want to see that movie," right? That's what Hollywood's trying to do, anyway. So I think that's where we're at with him now. He played 3 college games. He had his preseason cut short because of COVID protocol. So he has 9 NBA games. I mean, the egg has just cracked, and the little baby chick is just coming out of the egg. So we've seen enough, though, in this short period of time to know this guy could be a special player. The fact that he can run the floor, his length, his shot blocking, his ability, he's got moves in the lane. He made a three-pointer tonight again. But there are going to be times where you're just going to want to bench him down the stretch against a team as good as the Clippers and find another small lineup where Draymond's at center. You got Wanamaker there, Lee and Steph, and see how that goes for you. But he's going to be a very, very interesting player, and I think he's going to be a good fit for the Warriors and the way they play now, the way the NBA plays now, because he can run. He can handle the ball. I think he has a little problem catching the ball that I think he needs to work on. But he can shoot. He's graceful. And he's going to be a presence. And he gets more time with Steph, more time with Draymond. And they get that tic-tac-toe going where maybe Draymond drives to the bucket. Maybe he dishes off to a corner to Steph. Or maybe the lob is there for Wiseman. And he's going to know where he is. And I remember Chick Hearn, the great Lakers broadcaster, used to talk about court geography. Knowing where to be, what spot you're supposed to be on for your role, for your position. And he is still learning that. And once he does, we're going to see a pretty good movie. And it's going to get at least 4 out of 5 stars. I don't know if this is going to be a perennial all-star player, but he's going to be a very effective player this week. You know, he's got that demeanor right now. And I think part of it is he's just trying to find his way. Andrew Wiggins. It doesn't look like a fire player at all. But the guy came up with several good defensive possessions tonight and then had a couple of special moments on the offensive end. And so I think the fire is there. Maybe you just can't see it yet. And I think that's the same with Wiseman as well. And can I mention, Joe, coming off the bench, you know, the fact that they're playing better, one of the big reasons is Eric Paschal.
Oh, yeah.
He's developing a very consistent scoring threat off the bench, and I think it's good for him to be with the second group. So, and that's a young player too.
Yeah,
I mean, not as young as Wiseman. The guy had several years' experience in a major college program, and then all NBA rookie second team last year during the shortened season. But he got a lot of experience, and we were talking about it that in a situation where people don't really care how much you win, doesn't mean that much. It was a great way to be introduced into the league. And this is going to be another weapon coming off the bench.
Oh, yeah, and he's hard-nosed, too. And he's playing pretty good defense, even, guarding the big man and when he's the small ball center, which, that's not the easiest thing to do.
Well, that's it right there. He's taking advantage of those the big men when he plays small ball center. That's where he's getting a few pretty good meals. So if he keeps getting those matchups coming off the bench, he's going to profit from it.
Yeah, he did a nice job against Zubats, where he was able to make some drives there, a little bit of a mismatch. I was going to say, as far as Wiseman, I don't mind him shooting the threes. I know he makes 43% so far, but I'd rather not see him shooting threes very often. I just don't want him out there. I know that's the way the NBA is now, and, a lot of these big men can shoot threes, but I'd rather not see him shooting very many threes in a game. What about you?
No, I don't. I mean, if you've got the other guys going, you don't want that from him. It's nice that he can do that. If offensive possession breaks down and he happens to be out there and available, and I think that was the case in the last three, things were kind of getting down on the shot clock and he was open and there was nothing else going on, why not shoot it? So it's nice to have that extra threat there. I don't know if he's going to end up being, like Dirk Nowitzki or whatever, but that is an aspect of his game. And I think what's going to happen is there'll be times, and they might work this into the offense, where he spots up at the three and he makes enough of them. They're going to start closing out on him. And then he puts the ball on the floor and then fun stuff happens. So that's just, part of the game that is yet to develop for him. So I don't think that he's going to shoot a bunch of threes, not on this team, not even with the a shortage of three-point shooters, but he's going to be one of those guys.
I think the first one he shot, I was like, no, oh, yes.
Yeah.
I just didn't want him to take it, but he made it. By the way, his mom was at the game, and she's probably saying, are all Warriors games like this one?
Yeah. Well, don't get your expectations too high. This was pretty special tonight. But you know what? It's nice that they're able to at least get some family out there to watch him play. I think that helps, especially when you've been so far away for such a long time, especially for the players who were in the bubble last year. So that's nice that they were able to do that. I want to mention just real quick, Joe, it's tough because of COVID, the game presentation staff has had to be pared down. I think the Warriors are laying off about 9% of their workforce at the moment. And there's just, you know, they have a high payroll and a high tax, and it's just kind of tough. And right now you just don't need as many game day staff. But I do want to mention that Fred Cast,
yeah,
who 58 years, he's going to retire.
That was his last game, yeah.
That was his last game.
And what a game to go out on.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been such a fixture there. We see him all the time at those games over the years. So that was pretty cool. But pretty cool send-off for him.
By the way, Ray, I was curious what you think of this. The Bills-Colts playoff game on Saturday in Buffalo. They're going to have some fans there. It's not that many. I think it's like 10% of the stadium. But they tested for COVID, the fans did, on Wednesday and Thursday, and they're going to turn around and go to a game. Yeah. So they've tested, and then if they test negative, they can come into the game. The idea seems interesting, but still dangerous. Like, I'm not sure that the Warriors could pull that off, and I don't think San Francisco or California would allow it. But it's just something to think about that the Bills are doing that, because I think that's the first sporting event in New York that is allowing fans.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to be a guinea pig for that, but obviously there are certain fans who are excited to get out there and watch them in a playoff game, and you know, I get that for a team like the Bills that's trying to come up in the NFL world. But you know, the testing protocol there is a little weird to me. I mean, okay, you test right before the game and you're negative. How accurate is that test that you're using? A lot of questions about how this works out. But you are outdoors. If they can find a way to, you know, group the fans so they're, you know, like, for example, if you're with a family, you can stay together. But otherwise, you know, keep people separate. I don't know how many fans they're letting in. I think right now at Chase Center, that's a tougher hill to climb.
Yeah.
So, you know, I indoor events, it's going to be really, really tough for a long time until more people get the vaccine and, you know, knocking on Formica here, that we get those vaccines very quickly.
Absolutely. All right, last thing before we go, and this has nothing to do with basketball, but because we are two, you know, overall sports fans, especially Bay Area sports observers, Tommy Lasorda passed away today at the age of 93. And as the Dodgers manager, there was just such a great rivalry, of course, Giants-Dodgers. But what a rivalry the fans had with Tommy Lasorda. You know, anybody who went to Candlestick and saw a Giants-Dodgers game in the 70s and 80s, you know, saw just the incredible, intense booing that Tommy Lasorda would hear when he was on the field, or anytime, you know, he was doing anything, you know, he was arguing with an umpire, or just, you know, going out to take out a pitcher. And he was quite a character. And I know that you followed him quite a bit, Ray. You know, it's really sad to see him go, because he was somebody that I know fans just sort of gravitated towards anything that he did. And he had some pretty amazing rants over the years, whether it be with media members or even his own pitcher in the World Series. I think it was Doug Rao, who he took out of the game, and they had him mic'd. They had Lasorda mic'd, and you know, he was swearing at him. There was a lot of interesting moments with Tommy.
Yeah, I remember in the playoffs, where he came out and he pretty much nuked Jesse Orozco and told him to start bleeping throw strikes. And Orozco turned around and all of a sudden he started pitching well. I mean, he was, and a lot of people didn't think he was a great tactician, but he was a tremendous motivator and a tremendous showman. And very few people who have strode across the diamond were better ambassadors of the game. And the reason he was a good ambassador is that he really fueled that rivalry, like you said. I remember a doubleheader I went to at the Stick in 1983 when both teams, the Giants and Dodgers, were in contention. And just like 45,000 fans there. It's Sunday, I believe. It was a beautiful day. you know, a kind of day where at 4 o'clock the hawk wind comes in, and all of a sudden everybody's bundling up. But for about 3 hours, it's summertime, and they split the doubleheader. But there was a point, and then I was sitting right above the tunnel that led to the visiting clubhouse. And if you'll remember the stick, the players had to come in down the right field line.
Yeah.
And so that they have a long walk to the dugout in the bullpen to have the fans jeer them. And they would throw stuff at Tommy and say all sorts of foul things, and he would blow kisses. I mean, it was theater. It was opera. It was so much fun. And you know, I think in a way, and what was it, the quote Tommy had is, you love me and you hate yourself for the fact that you love me. I think in a way, Giants fans love to razz him, love to give him crap, but love the fact that he was invested in this rivalry. Because I think there are times where Giants fans cared more about the rivalry and more about the Dodgers than Dodger fans care about the Giants, right? But Tommy was happy to be the lightning rod. And oh, by the way, in this doubleheader back in 83, the bench is cleared. And our friend Bill Lasky could probably tell you about this. And I think Dwayne Kuiper was on that team as well. The bench is cleared because the Dodgers thought that Giants manager Frank Robinson was going through his nose to mimic Steve Howe blowing lines of coke. Because, as we know, the late Steve Howe had a drug problem, and it was very sensitive for the Dodger players. So the bench is cleared. And Robinson said, oh, no, I had some sweat on my nose. That's it. Tommy said, well, I didn't see anything. So, I mean, those were the days. And,
yeah.
And he was quite a character. And, you know, it reminds us that this is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be fun at the end of the day. And that this tonight was a night that reminded us of that. And God knows, we haven't had much fun in the last year.
Absolutely. It was great to get back here with the Warriors podcast after a lot of time off. And I'll tell you what, like you said earlier on this podcast, this is going to be an exciting year. It's really going to be fun to watch this team. You know, can't wait to keep talking about it, right? Thanks a lot.
You bet, Joe. My pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Dubs OT Warriors podcast. Join Joe Castellano and Ray Woodson again next week on thesportsvirus.com.